What makes people all over America break down and cry like this? Call 1-900-9099-CRY and hear it for yourself. $2 for the first minute, 45 cents each additional minute. If you're under 18, ask your parents before you call. 1-900-9099-CRY.
Willing to rewatch a movie.
Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Quit.
Strawberry banana.
Movie blob.
Please don't aggregate this.
Lillard, long range three.
Their defense is atrocious.
I'm sort of the rock star.
Right on the cowboy.
People. Tiso is the official watch of the NBA.
Everybody who listens to this podcast knows how I feel about aggregation.
I'm oddly intrigued by neck tattoos.
You know, we love China. We love the plein air.
It comes a dunk.
Shut up and listen.
You think you're better than me?
Bye.
All right, welcome back to the Rewindables. Chris Mandelkin, Ben Kroc, Christian Lynch. Gents, we are like 25 plus, 26, 27 episodes deep.
He was counting,
yep.
Really.
And yep, the year is 20.
I don't know if that number is a joke or the actual number. I literally don't know
No, I don't know either because I am editing this as we speak. tonight begins our final dance, our
farewell
chapter.
Our last dance? Begins question mark?
The long goodbye.
Mm.
And to celebrate that, to help us commemorate and honor our time discussing the redacted ice skating film, we are joined by a special guest. Sheesh. Welcome to
sheesh.
The show.
Hey.
You do know Sheesh's work from blowing our mind not very long ago. As Sheesh, you were the person who called in to the 1-900 hotline number.
That's right.
1-800, but I hope maybe it's a charge $2.
We have both options available to listeners.
Cool. Yeah, it cost me money to call you, basically.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
And I do love that you were the one that pointed out something that we had all missed.
Hey, Rewindables. This is Sheesh. I am a super fan of your podcast series on redacted ice skating movie. And I'm just calling to tell you that you might have missed a cameo. Kind of an important one. I'm going to let you figure it out. But the clue for this cameo is we don't want him to hide his light under a basket now, do we?
Which is that one Mr. Paul Michael Glazer is in the film.
Yeah.
Welcome. You're a hero.
Sheesh has worked on actual films and shows, but her real claim to fame is calling in to Swish FM and blowing our minds about the Paul Michael Glazer cameo in the 1992 Redacted Ice Skating movie. So that's really the top line item.
I think that's accurate.
Yeah. So that's what she's known for.
I want to begin with just an opening question. Like, I feel like we'll have so many questions for you throughout the course of the pod. But while we're on this topic, which is the Paul Michael Glazer spotting that you pointed out for us, so I want to ask you about that. Let's begin there. Is that something that you knew about? Is that something you caught on your own? Or was that something that you had read about in your own research of the redacted
Also
film,
feel free to pass on this question. If you want to leave it a mystery, that's totally up to you.
No, because you know what? This is a 30-year-old movie, so we have to do excavation to get answers, and I'm here for that.
We believe in excavation.
I thought I knew the answer to it, you know, because I knew you were going to ask me that question, obviously. Like, how do you know?
Right.
And I was like, oh, well, it's obviously in the credits, right? So I watched the movie again the other day, not in the credits. I look on IMDb. It's not even listed as uncredited. So then I'm like, how do I know? And I think the answer to that is because it's not like there was a ton of press in there. I mean, maybe there was like a movie review that I saw, but I think honestly, like, I just kind of did the math of like, well, the director is this guy and he's an actor. And then I know what that actor's face looks like. And then watching it for the, I don't know, 78th or 79th time, I probably was like, hey, that's the director.
That's
like
incredible.
The hot second in this movie. Yeah, because it's not.
So
I
wait, you were listening. You were listening to our podcast, and already in the back of your head,
no, I already knew this.
You knew. Yeah, you were like, you've known this for years.
When, you were like, I wonder when they're going to mention that the director.
What episode?
Has a cameo.
At what episode is it? Episode 30, 35? When did they bring this up?
And when? you had him on.
You're like, surely, when they have the man himself on their podcast, this will be covered. Surely.
Yeah, well, once I saw that, I was like, oh, hey, here it comes, the big reveal. He's going to be like, by the way, guys, you know, he's not going to be able to resist letting you guys know that he has a cameo in this, and then nothing.
But it's not even just him. It's like D.B. Sweeney didn't mention it. Tony Gilroy didn't mention it. Robert Cort, the producer, who's his best friend, didn't mention it. It's just, it's a wild detail for all of these people who we spoke to on our psychotic podcast to never mention. And
we needed a sheesh.
It's awesome. It's so awesome that you knew this, but also that this was just embedded in your memory of a film that you've watched so many times that you've just known this while listening to our podcast. It's not like you like recently learned this in the last few weeks or something.
Yeah, nope. No way. And it's like it got like memory hold or something. But I don't know. I mean, if you believe in destiny, I mean, maybe it got memory hold so that I could be here today. Because if someone else had mentioned it.
Yeah.
Like, how else would I have insinuated myself onto this incredible show?
I, for one, believe in God. And I feel like this is the type of stuff that God spends his time, you know, dealing with. So
yeah, this is also when she learned she signed up for a Christian podcast, part of the Christian network.
This is the kind of gospel I like to disseminate. Yes. God is real, and he mainly busies himself with arranging
for
ways. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Incredible.
Wait, do you guys know that my Twitter avatar is
yes.
Kate?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I couldn't tell.
And also, that wasn't done for your benefit. That's just how I live.
Well, that brings us to my next question. I don't know if Chris, you were going here, but I.
No.
Yeah, we all want to know just your origin story with the film and, you know, why you love it and what your history is with it. So
what's not to love? I mean, so I'll say that when I was telling people that I was about to do this crazy thing, you know, I'd have to start with like, oh, there's this movie, because a lot of people still shockingly have never heard of it. And so people's first question is like, oh, were you into ice skating? And I was like, I mean, ice skating was big, you know, like that year it was like Tonya Harding and Nancy Kerrigan.
It was the year.
Yamaguchi, like, not really. I mean, I was kind of, I think I was a gymnast at the time. So like I was more into gymnastics. And then I was like, no, I think I was kind of into like being like a stone cold bitch and like witty banter. And like this movie just like hit that sweet spot for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's it. Threads a perfect sheesh needle. I mean, this checks all the boxes. You got bitchery. You got great witty banter. This is a perfect
thing. Such good banter.
Did you know immediately when you watched this movie that you're like, I love this? Or did it grow on you? And was this like a VHS? Because I know I wore this out with like family going, getting that VHS, renting it over and over. Then it became the DVD era. Then I bought like 18 copies in various digital forms for this podcast. It lives on in so many ways.
Do you have a good Blu-ray?
I don't know if I have a Blu-ray because I was so busy getting various digital copies.
Wait, but sheesh, do you have a good Blu-ray?
No, but I need one because I popped in my DVD into my Blu-ray the other day and it was no bueno.
Oh, no.
I need a better copy.
The DVD does have some bonus features that I found quite useful.
Not the version I have. There's like a special collection that has that, but I don't even have
that. It's time to spring. Actually, I think I said I was going to send you a very special gift.
You did.
And you might be getting a Blu-ray.
Yeah, you just found out what it was.
But that also requires me to get your...
Look under your chair, sheesh. Sheesh. It's there right now.
Oh my God, it's Drew Barrymore's head.
So, yes, this is...
What's in the box?
From Swish FM, you will be getting a Blu-ray copy of The Cutting Edge. you know, soon via, you know, whatever vendor can send it at reasonable rates.
Amazing.
The crazy thing is that there is, like, probably stuff, like, there is research that we have not even begun to, like, mine yet. Like, that's, like, weirdly enough, I actually haven't watched many interviews, like, contemporary interviews about this. Like, you know, I know Chris has dug up a lot in his archival research, you know, for his drops and stuff, but, like, I haven't listened or read a Paul Michael Glaser interview about this film, and or like a director's commentary. I'm sure that there's so much more that we could do here.
Least half the people involved with that film that you guys interviewed referred to this movie as like a B movie. So I'm not actually
maybe not. There wasn't a ton of press done. They weren't going wall to wall late night talk show circuit.
I think what's interesting about it is that like it's such a touchstone movie that in like every year like that goes by, people talk about it more and more, like more so than when it came out. You know what I mean? So I feel like probably D.B. Sweeney and Tony Gilroy and you know Moira Kelly and everyone involved with the movie. Like talk more about it in retrospect now because it's like this like cult classic thing. Just like hence our podcast.
Thanks in no small part to the work that we're doing here, I would say. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Give credit where credit is due.
Yeah.
So I did do a lot of VHS damage. I will say like I do have strong memories of walking around Blockbuster with like my like high school friends and everyone's trying to figure out a movie to watch at the sleepover or whatever. And then like no one can agree. And I'm just like in the background going, how about the and everyone just being like, not again, no. And actually, I did text the high school group chat today to see if, like, if I was, like, exaggerating my connection to this movie, like, if over time it had, turned into this obsession that, like, actually didn't really read at the time. And, like, maybe you just want some real-time reaction.
We're going to need that reaction.
Yeah.
I'm looking for verbatim,
So the first response is, so I was like, I'm participating in a podcast episode today on the incredible 1992 film Bleep. Does anyone have any general memory of like my or our relationship to this movie when we were kids? And the first response is, other than your total obsession with it?
Oh, yes.
Here we go.
I think
that
of you.
That is what we want to hear.
I think of you every time someone references a Topic.
Phenomenal.
I 100%, somebody 100%ed that. Every time I see Moira Kelly's face, no matter the movie, I think, sheesh.
Fantastic. I'm so happy right now.
Honestly, when
you are legit. You got the bona fides.
Yeah, you've got the credentials. That much. You're in the door. You've got the job. You're here.
It's called doing the work, folks.
Still doing the work. And I remember when... Chris last episode was trying to wind it up as our final episode. I said, no, there's still more to cover.
Chris has been trying to wrap this thing up for about 3 months, I would say.
He said, my
God, 3 months.
What more do we
have? You understand we've been doing this for half a year?
Oh my God.
Sheesh, why I'm excited to have you here is I've been doing a little work this week to try to like close the loop on I wanted to make sure that we went to the fan base that exists out there to hear some of the things that maybe we were missing that I think might actually spark some additional conversation that I don't think we covered.
There were
reviews from a little thing called Letterboxd, which we are fans of Letterboxd here. So I was crushed.
Wait, are you on Letterboxd? Sheesh.
Sheesh, are you on Letterboxd?
Oh, no, I'm not.
But you could be.
I only recently joined, and I gotta tell you, I'm a big advocate, big proponent of this particular app.
It's the best place to get movie reviews.
Yeah, so get off that Twitter and get on Letterboxd, folks.
All right.
Sheesh, I'm there with you. I'm not on.
It's the best. It's like give up.
Well, it's intimidating. I remember like for a long time being like, I don't. It's like for like real like film buffs. Like you have to like, go to like film school. To like, it's all like Criterion Collection freaks, but it's like, no, you can just go on there and like, whatever. It's honestly, it's great. Just now I'm doing an unpaid advertisement for Letterboxd.
I know.
But honestly, I love it just because it's like, I have a million, like, if you're someone who has like, 60 different Google Docs and like Gmail drafts of like, oh, the movies that I want to watch at some point, or like, oh, like movies that I like that I don't want to forget, like, and you just make like random ass like text edit files or whatever. Just delete all those and get on Letterboxd, and you can organize everything in one place, and it's great for that. Yes. And then if you feel like it, you can write reviews and read reviews, but you don't have to do that if you don't want to.
Okay, so, I'll think about it.
Yeah.
I know everyone's like mad at Goodreads right now, so like I don't want to be in like a movie version of Goodreads.
Is Goodreads bad now? I never got to.
Is Goodreads bad?
I think so.
It's bad.
I think it's bad reads. I think that people pile on to books that have not even been released yet and can kind of like take them. Oh,
that's not cool.
Yeah.
I don't know if they do that on Letterboxxd, but I don't know.
It hasn't probably happened not. On Letterboxxd yet. We have got some. All right. So I've gathered some reviews that I think will spark additional conversation that I think is worthy of being part of our time. And later on, just to tease what's going to be coming up later, I did watch today in its entirety the sequel to the.
This is not the producer. This guy is not the producer of this podcast.
For the gold.
That's just how he talks.
He just decided he freelanced this one.
Coming up after the break, we do have. I watched the entirety of the sequel.
Yeah, the 2006 unofficial sequel. No, I don't know.
It is directly related. It is canon. Both
is it
Kate
though?
It is because Kate and Doug.
Wait,
are in
is this
it
the immediate? Is this the immediate sequel or is a subsequent
immediate.
One?
Well, if immediate by immediate sequel. You mean the 2006 film,
immediately,
which
I
has
later.
A lot of
I
weird chronology
that.
Errors and
going
doesn't
for
make
the gold. Is that going for the
going
gold?
For the gold.
Another one?
It's going for the gold. There is another one. Sheesh. That one's
there's
later.
A, yeah. There's no, a third.
I know. But that one, the third one does not involve Doug and Kate. And I did not watch that one for that reason. So that's
when was the third? When was part three made?
Chris, I couldn't tell.
You might
you
have to research that real quick.
I immediately stopped when I realized it really had nothing to do with the films
with
that we've watched.
The original one.
I felt it was important to at least, whether we accept that anyone was involved in the sequel, the 2006 sequel, they were not. There was no writers, directors. I cross-referenced basically everyone in crew.
It was the same studio. It was MGM. I know that.
They own the property, but none of the producers. Anyways, we'll get to that later. But what I want to do first is some of these reviews I found. Let's start with a simple.
Sorry, just real quick. Three, Chasing the Dream, was a TV movie released in 2008.
They've got so much strength and so much power on the ice. They are just a pleasure to watch.
Some competitors seem destined for glory.
Zach, I'm ready.
Only to have their dreams ripped away.
He needs a partner.
He's a dangerous skater. I can't find anyone else willing to partner up with him.
No, he's not dangerous. He's brilliant.
You really want me to skate with someone else?
It's the only thing that makes sense.
Others only get their shot if fate lends a hand.
Idiota!
Becoming partners would be a long shot.
Let me ask you a question. Will you skate with me?
You're wasting your time. I don't go for guys in leotards.
Figure hockey roller. Strap him on and I'll smoke you every time.
He's a famous skater, and if he wants to skate with you, then that means something, no?
You want to throw your career away? You do it. Do it without me.
Becoming champions.
Hola.
Could be incredible.
Watch your edges. They're sharper.
And relax. Oh, and don't forget about the toe. Oh.
They chase that dream straight to television. Yes.
So let's. I'm gonna start here. I think this is a good one. Yetten Noises wrote this review on March 10th, 2018. He said, "Redacted ice skating movie is 90% montages, 5% illegal figure skating moves, 4% sexual tension, 1% Christmas." So my question is: Is a Christmas movie? Because it does involve Christmas. Would this be a movie that you'd pop on at Christmas and be like, this counts as a Christmas movie?
Oh, yeah, that does have that New Year's vibe.
That's loaded.
To it.
Yeah.
They
that's loaded.
Skip over Christmas because, you know,
yeah,
it's Christmas and they skate, as Kate says at the door when she's yelling at Anton.
Oh, yeah. Good point. But
I would say Letter of the Law by Letter of the Law. No, not really a Christmas movie. Or let's say like a holiday movie, like holiday, you know, but is it a movie if you're home for Christmas or home for the holidays that you could watch with your family?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. But this is also just an awesome movie that you would always want to watch with your parents or your siblings or your friends. So I don't know how that's really anything other than just an awesome movie.
So I think we're saying it's not a Christmas movie.
But I would say no. I would say no Christmas movie. Although there is,
it's Christmas movie.
The gift exchange, like, is clearly those are Christmas gifts. There is not really any mention though of Christmas besides the line that Sheesh very impressively called out. The New Year's party, there's holiday Christmas-ish decorations. Obviously,
I'm kind of mad. If they were there and Doug didn't go home to his family and stuff. Like, did he sit at that fancy table and have dinner with Kate and Doug?
Yeah, like, was there a tree with presents under it?
Was there an awkward family?
That would have been real awkward.
That we missed out on?
Yeah.
I'm kind of mad about that. I'm not going to lie.
I know.
Fair enough.
Now I'm imagining Jack firing up that fireplace on, Christmas Eve, reading The Night Before Christmas to the kids.
They're
drinking red wine and a goblet.
Filled with an ash bucket of crumpled figures that have never cut it. The non-go-to guys. I would also shout out Letterboxd user Ushy Gushy Bussy. Great name.
Wow.
Ushy Gushy Bussy says, who rewatched the film.
Letterboxd advertisement.
Letterboxd. Watch, love, repeat.
Yep. On February 22nd, 2023, this is the perfect snow day movie. Now that I agree with.
I can get behind that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Definitely a snow day film.
Yeah. Bottom line, if you fake being sick and want to stay home from school or it's a snow day, which are essentially the same thing, I don't want to go to school. This is definitely the movie I would want
to
watch.
Great movie to watch in bed under covers.
Yes. I want grilled cheese, soup, and I want to watch this movie.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. It's extremely comforting. Yeah.
Now, a phrase you brought up earlier, Chris, that I want to get your take on, sheesh, is this. Someone, R&L Vargas, said, why is this film not even considered a cult classic? It's such a fun movie. Is a cult classic? Is it even in the, or should it be in the discussion of a cult classic? Do you think it is a cult classic? Does it have the hallmarks of it? Sheesh, what say you on Cutting Edge? Is it?
Oh, man. It's who decides? Who is the arbiter of what a cult movie is? Now that there's an internet and, you said, a growing fan base, the same way that, Dave Matthews and U2 have somehow managed to grow their fan base over the last 20 years. I feel like this movie has too. But has it risen to a level, a volume of appreciation that constitutes cult classic? I don't know. I mean, I'm always amazed when I go online now and I see people say they love that movie. But then IRL, I'll talk to people who are 30, 35, 25, they've never heard of it. So I don't know where I land on that. I definitely I land on one skate. Do I land on two? I don't know. It's a cult classic to me, but I'm biased.
I agree. Boys, what do we say? Cult classic? Not a cult classic?
I'm with Sheesh here. The thing, to me, obviously it's a cult classic, but I guess by the letter of the law, what defines the cult of it all, what level of success, what's the metric of success that it has to achieve in terms of visibility for it to be cult level? I don't know, but I just know that this is an awesome movie and it has people feel about this movie in a way that, I don't know, I just think it's on a different level. When you talk to people about this movie and they people love this movie. They don't just like this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to figure out what the definition of cult classic in my mind, it's not weird enough. Cult classics are more almost not targeted for real mainstream acceptance to begin with. And then they develop, an organic following because they're sort of weird and offbeat. And this movie is clearly not meant to be a weird offbeat. Yeah. It is straight down the middle, trying to hit all four quadrants, trying to be a mainstream, classic. Not a cult classic, but it just was a small little, you know, not a huge film. But then the following that it developed, like there are culty elements in terms of like the Pamchenko and Topic are like themselves have like cult followings. Like if you say Topic, like people will know what you almost instinctively they'll be like, oh yeah, I sort of remember that. So like there are like because of those like iconic like unforgettable lines. And yeah, like you said, Chris and Sheesh, like there, you either like don't really know this movie or never saw it or don't really remember it, or you fucking adore it.
Also, Ben, I think like, you know, the creators of the film have, like she said before, have talked about this openly as being like a B film, like a B level film. And I feel like people who have seen this film and like it feel like it's an A film. Like this is like no, like maybe that's the cult classic of it all, is that like this is more like, I know its intention was that it was just supposed to be like a nice, you know, like entertaining film, but like it feels more like, it feels more like high art.
I mean, after watching this, sequel,
yeah,
let me tell you, it's high,
totally. Totally. I mean, I think the thing that's jumped out at me when I watched it this last time is that, like, there's so much commitment to it. And I think maybe I felt that after, especially after the interviews you guys did. Like, there's such, like, emotional commitment in the acting in this movie. Like, no one's, like, winking at you.
Yeah, right. It's like, very sincere.
Like, even Rick Tuttle, you know? Even all these, like, you know, like, off-brand Americans. Like, there's all these Canadian actors in the movie, right? Like...
Wait, you know, Rick is Canadian?
The eye doctor is Canadian. Walt is Canadian. Yes, Laurie is Canadian. Oh,
sheesh. These guys have no idea the amount of work I did reaching out to their reps. Yes, there were a lot of Canadian actors, okay?
Yeah,
oh, my God.
I mean, anytime a movie films or show films in Canada, you know they're going for like the maple syrup brigade.
Some things in life are too good to change.
Pastry syrup, please.
Like the rich maple taste of Log Cabin.
Lick it.
After all, you grew up with it, and so did your mom.
Could you cut my pancake?
And probably her mom, too. Just thank your lucky stars, some things never go out of style.
Good.
Log Cabin Syrup. Rich maple taste for over 100 years. In the heart of every home, there's a little log cabin.
It's like, they're trying to save money, right? Like,
yes. Yeah.
Let's be real.
This is a Canucksploitation film. It's official.
No doubt.
It is. Down to the, like, you know, Toronto Steakhouse masquerading as, like, Chicago or wherever. Manhattan or Boston or wherever.
Not just any Toronto Steakhouse.
Say the name, Sheesh. Say the name.
Kai Steakhouse.
Kai Steakhouse. Oh, my God.
The best. I thought you were about to lift a mug that said,
I literally thought you had a high mug.
I lifted my glass as if it were one.
I was like, oh, my God.
They must make those.
It's a real deal steakhouse, but with a lot of modern flair. I'm a big, big fan. And what have you brought in for us to do this morning? I see these beautiful cuts of beef.
Yeah, I got a nice bone-in ribsteak for you guys today at New York Steakhouse.
Okay, so what's the trick? What do you brought a lot of accoutrement, but do you marinate it? What do you do?
I don't marinate our steak. We don't marinate it. We just basically put a regular oil and salt and pepper.
Because it's that good, right?
The cuts of flavor,
beef.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you have good beef. Okay, and then so what's the trick then when it comes to actually barbecuing? How hot do you get this guy?
You want the grill to be really hot, and then just sear it really quickly, 3 minutes each side, and then you flip it, and 3 minutes on each side again.
So you're literally 6 minutes That's it. And then you let it rest for a little while.
And rest it, and then we bring it back to the heat again.
How important is that, Liz, letting it rest after you're done?
To make the blood doesn't run out on the plate when the customers are cutting on the steak.
Okay.
Yeah.
So do you have anything in there now, or these are already done there? So what do you want to do?
Right now I have a plain steak right here.
Okay.
Just see how hot is the grill.
Feels hot.
Yeah. So what I do is just...
Again, I can't believe Andrew Schultz is so far away right now. So what kind of oil do you use?
Just regular canola oil.
Canola oil. Okay.
And regular kosher salt.
Something was with a high smoke point, right? It's better than... Would that be better than olive oil?
Yes. Olive oil will be higher in smoke.
Right.
So it's just granulated... season it salt and pepper.
So you don't spare on the salt and pepper?
Nope.
But that's it. Wow.
Yeah. That's basically it. And we let our product speak for itself.
Sheesh, I think to that point, like, it's just, I not to belabor this, but we've said it on so many different podcasts and to Tony himself, but I just think the writing is so strong and everyone involved with the film treated it with, like, genuine sincerity,
mm-hmm.
that it feels like a stage play.
Yeah. You said that once and I was like, yes, I remember when you said that. And I was like, yes.
Yeah. And I don't think I've ever said this on the pod. I think I told the boys privately, but I was in a play written by Tony Gilroy's father, Frank Gilroy. Yeah. And I performed in this play a couple years before he passed away, and I was in touch with him. I was like, we were emailing, and he was trying to see the play, but was like, it was towards the end of his life, and he wasn't able to make it.
On behalf of the Writers Guild of America East, I am truly proud and honored to present the Ian McClellan Hunter Award for Lifetime Achievement in Writing to Frank D. Gilroy.
I'm so glad I was nice to him, which wasn't always easy. That Sterling fellow there, you might like to know, will give some of you parents with kids you're having trouble with in high school. That fine fellow was officially designated when he was in high school as a disciplinarian something or other. He was in their records, but it turns out good, so don't give up. This cane is an affectation. I only have it because Michael, when he called me about the award, he suggested I do it so I'd look a little more deserving of this award.
When I learned that detail shortly before Tony came on the pod, like, wait, Tony Gilroy is actually the son of Frank Gilroy, the playwright. I was like, right, this guy comes from like a theater tradition, like that he... You know, like the writing in this film, the dynamics between the characters are so strong, and there's just like such good bones in the film that mm-hmm. I think it like really holds up and stands a testament of time in a way that other films maybe don't. And that maybe, Ben, speaks to the culty classic nature of it, in just that it's like it's just a really quality film.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at like, I think the sort of legacy of the film is a lot like the legacy of like Tony himself, where it's like this was his very first movie, and then you look at the career he went on to have, and you're like, oh, like that was mm-hmm. like his origin yeah. story. Like, it's such a like. I don't know. It's such a testament to like, yeah, why it has its staying powers. Cause yeah, it was like created and like, obviously like
it was created by the guy who like created.
Yeah.
He's working on, you know, unmade.
And is now like in charge of like the major, like IP of like the fucking biggest like entertainment company in America. And like, yeah, it's just mm-hmm. wild.
I've bleeped all this, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't say any names, I don't think. I don't remember saying any names.
Oh, I did.
Oh, yeah,
I
just bleeped
myself repeatedly.
I actually think this leads into another review that I think addresses something that I've been feeling throughout this podcast. That this is a review by Sophie Peralt, who watched the film on April 8th, 2020, And Sophie wrote, I can no longer pretend something I've watched 5 or 6 times over the past years isn't a full fucking 5-star flick. I dare you to find a better flirting in any movie. 5 stars.
Mm.
And the question is this. It's like, why do we struggle to, like, this movie is something I have easily seen more than I've easily seen this more than, like, like some movie that's ostensibly supposed to be your 5-star.
Some garbage, film. Yeah.
But, like, why
some trash, some French, like, New Wave filth.
Like, I mean, sheesh. I'm going to ask this to you first, which is, like, do you struggle to give stars to this film? Like, is this a film that you would easily be like 5 stars, or would you be like, oh, I feel like I have to say 3, but I know in my heart, like, I love this more than 3. So, sheesh, how would you feel starring?
This is a good question. You know, I started, like, keeping a list of my, like, as you said, like, the text doc of movies that I watch, like, I think in 2020. And I grade movies, and it's kind of arbitrary, but I tend to be like, why do I give something an A? Like, is it just because it's an excellent movie? Like, something more than that. It's like, I give something an A or like 5 stars when I think that it's the best version of what it's set out to do. Or if it exceeds that, you know, like taking into account the resources it has, you know, like, is it like punching above its weight? Like, those are the things that will make me say A, not necessarily because I'm like, it's technically perfect, or, you know, I love it so much, or it made me cry so much, or whatever, you know? So with this movie, it's like, it's obviously like 5 stars in my heart, but I probably would like give it a 4.5 or like an A minus, just like because of the, like, there's not that much money spent on it, and you can tell.
Mm-hmm.
And like, maybe that's mean of me, but it's like, just slightly like muted in its palette, like in a way that makes it feel like it's not shiny enough for me to give it 5 stars.
Well, Sheesh, it's been so great having you on the podcast.
Yeah, I know. I'm ejected from the podcast.
Sheesh, it's been real.
Yeah, wrong answer. But the answer was 5 stars.
Yeah.
No, that makes sense.
That was your final test.
Yeah, that was
the only thing
failed.
I would push back on that is, like, sheesh, I'm curious. Like, I don't even know if there was more money on the film, how I would suggest it have been spent.
Just a fully lit rink instead of a roving spotlight. Yeah.
Like Robert Court and Paul Michael Glazer for sure would be like, oh my God, we would have spent it on this, or we would have reshot this, or
yeah.
We would have had what was PMG's big issue was that, like, the arena was dark and in actual figure skating, there are lights on,
yeah.
And
yeah.
See the audience face.
More actual people in the stands. Yeah.
That was right. So interesting, actually. That was I always wondered why it was so dark, you know, because it obviously doesn't like ring true to life.
Ben thought it was.
I assumed it was his thing. Like, I want this film to look like my previous film.
Ben was like, of course I know all about
the. He had the same spotlight guy from 1987.
I understood what you're doing there.
Yeah.
He was like, no, we just didn't have the fucking money.
They reused the same spotlight and the same leotards. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, I think the answer is like fewer Canadians. Like, it needed fewer Canadians. I'm going to get you guys so much hate mail from Canada. That's my objective.
Seriously, what's wrong with Canada?
Really, no, I think you're
they
right.
They needed more wait staff at Highs.
It deserves 5 stars. It does. It does, because they are doing a lot with, like, pretty few resources, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, I hear what you're saying, though, in terms of, like, you know, this film didn't have the loftiest ambition. Like, Tony himself would have admitted, like, he was just trying to get something fucking made. Like, he wasn't trying to make. No one was.
Yeah.
Like, Paul Michael Glazer wasn't, like, he was just trying to work and, like, you know, got pitched this thing, and he was like, oh, yeah, I've always wanted to do a comedy, like, whatever.
Yeah, and Robert Court was making populist films,
yeah.
You know, like, which is fine. He wants to make money.
Which
made so much money, but...
But you're not a fan, if I'm not mistaken.
That does not hold up. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, boy. This is my fault, guys.
Sorry, Professor Court. Like, that is...
Once again, sheesh. It's been
fantastic
talking.
What have I done? Okay. We don't have to go down a side path about Cocktail, but
no,
maybe
I
in a future pod.
Absolutely. The next 48 episode pod will be all about that film.
No, but I've already... Ben was asking, what do you think we should do next? I'm like... this was actually even before the Robert Quarry episode, so I said because I love that movie.
Great choice. Great choice. Yeah.
It is a great pick.
I love that movie.
That's also in contention.
Yeah, it's
contention.
On the list.
It's in contention. So another thing, another review I happen to like that I think is interesting is Tanya wrote, she rewatched the film on July 12th.
Tanya
Harding. It was Tanya Harding.
Okay, just checking.
July 12th, 2022.
Tanya said, H, oh, period.
Yeah, Tanya H. She said, the worst part about this movie is that it's not 12 hours long. if you could stretch a plot line in the... Ooh. What would you want to know more about? Like, I know we're not... I'm not seeing a full-fledged, like, spin-off or anything like that, but, like, is there something that you, at the end of the movie, wanted to know more about?
I mean... No, someone else go first. But, like, there's definitely things where I'm like, that could have been filmed.
I have an answer here. Wait, let me pull up my notes.
This is something... I feel like each one of the characters in this movie, we have talked at length about their backstory. So I feel like, you know, the three of us, Ben, Christian, we could easily, you know, talk about how we would want more backstory on Hale. And we want to know about Doug Dorsey's brother, Jem, who works at the bar, what's
Walt.
Going on with him.
Yep. Walt. Penalty
Walt.
Box.
Walt slash Jem and his whole connection to our friends, of course, from the movie, the redacted Beantown movie. But yeah, we would want to know more about who else. I don't know.
I have one. So early on in the movie, they mention one of Kate's, was it a former partner? I think it was Spindler, right? Spindler is the one that, let me find the line, where is it? Yeah. Spindler said that he before he skates with her, he wear garlic from neck and sleep with cross. And then Spindler, great line from Anton. And then Spindler reappears later as one of the pairs skating at Nationals, but Spindler, like, I forget if they even name his partner, but Spindler isn't, like, set up as Nyman. Thank you. Of course you know that off the top of your head. They're not set up as a rival in any way. Like, you would think that, like, oh, maybe, like, she'll get back at this guy who, like, didn't like her and blah, blah, blah. And, like, Spindler, like, I just want to know more about Spindler. I feel like we could easily have, you know, a good 20 to 30 minutes about Spindler's whole story and the rivalry and tension between the backstory of that and then, like, that coming to more of a head at Nationals. But, you know.
I think I would like a little, like, childhood of, like, Moira and her mom, like, before her mom passed away.
Yes. Yeah, good call.
Yes.
Some flashbacks. Yeah. Watching her skate.
We have a black and white photo, which I proudly got in the draft. The ghost of Kate's dead mother.
Incredible pick.
You know what I'm going to be mad about? Is an extended New Year's Eve party. Like, what? Like, you know what I'm not mad about? Uh-huh. You know what I'm not mad about? The morning after.
Yes.
With the old,
oh my
with
God.
The old woman and Doug Dorsey.
Where did the old lady end up in? Yeah, what room did she wake up in?
Yeah, like, how does that night really go?
Yeah, what did the band, where was the after party?
Yeah, she's like chasing a cater waiter around the house.
Yeah, they left a lot on the cutting room floor there.
Yep. That could have been a much longer scene.
That's how you get a 12-hour flick.
Yeah.
Next review point from Sophia Adams. I think this is an interesting point. She watched the film on February 6, 2023, so it's having a bit of a resurgence. She says, having your first kiss be at the Olympics in front of a huge crowd after just skating a groundbreaking and beautiful long program has got to be one of the most sick flexes of all time. Now, here's my question. You... as your real starting of your relationship, being in this enormous adrenaline-fueled situation where your passions are already riding high for reasons that are not even related to your romantic relations, like, there's just so much chemistry flowing through your body in that moment. Like, can a relationship survive it? I remember at the end of...
I was literally just going to... I was going to name that movie. I'm like, this is very reminiscent of...
Yes, the end of... I believe... as Keanu Reeves and Sandra Bullock are sliding out of the back of a bus at an airport to survive. Sandra Bullock, I believe, is the one who mentions that those who like get together in moments of great intensity have a very low success rate of actually staying together, which is, so I don't know. I'm kind of curious.
Yeah, yeah. She's so they the final lines of are Keanu Reeves saying, and this is like, I guess, referenced earlier in the movie, Jack, Keanu's character, says, "I have to warn you, I've heard relationships based on intense experiences never work." And Sandra Bullock's Annie replies, "Okay, we'll have to base it on sex then." And then Jack says, "Whatever you say, ma'am." So I do kind of feel like there's a lot of parallels
earlier in the film. I believe Sandra Bullock has another meteor quote, because I remember like it's a callback. So
she
mentions that like these relationships don't tend to work. So I guess my question is, at the end of the film, obviously they kiss on the rink and it's this moment, but do we think a relationship can actually survive this? Like, it's all culminated at this moment. It works as a moment for their dynamic for the film. But do we think like a Kate and Doug, that's so much. Where do you go from there? Like, where do you go? A wedding isn't going to be as good as that.
Yeah, it's a pretty big letdown. I mean, the question is answered in the 2006 sequel film, which, no spoilers, but maybe we'll get to that. But yeah, I'm curious to hear everyone else's thoughts.
Sheesh, if someone in this scenario, man. Can they survive that?
Okay, well, taking this moment out of the picture, right? They have been with each other day in and day out for a year and a half, right? Or that's what he yells in the elevator.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's actually been a year and a half, or he's just saying that in the heat of the moment.
Yeah, well, it was like early 1990 when he shows up in Greenwich, right? Or is it mid 90? It's 1990. No, maybe it's like fall of 1990. And then the Olympics are what, like February 92? So yeah, almost a year and a half.
Yeah, about a year and a half.
Yeah.
So like, they have like sort of like a foundation of being bored together.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's like,
great point.
You know, that puts a point like squarely in the column of like they can outlast the adrenaline of this moment.
Mm-hmm.
I'll take it a step further, Sheesh. Kate sees Doug in a high stakes moment.
I thought you were going to say high stakes.
No, she sees him in this high stakes environment.
Oh my God.
Sorry. Relax, everyone. We're not talking steaks.
We're not talking
ribeyes.
Give me that garlic toast.
The emotional steaks. What is at play in their relationship? But Kate sees Doug in this very high stakes
high stakes.
It is high stakes. Every time you walk in there, it's high stakes, okay?
It's high stakes.
Oh, fuck. When you've got that Oasis... Oasis plan on the PA system, okay?
All right, go ahead.
It's very emotional.
Let's give this another shot.
Just don't look back in anger, okay?
Kate sees Doug in a very high stakes moment, and he vomits uncontrollably before taking the ice.
Correct.
So, but she is used to him sort of in the everyday of it all,
mm-hmm.
you know, at the practice facility hanging out, he's playing ice hockey, you know, she's used to the version of the guy that's sort of mellow and chill and just there hanging out as she's reading a book, you know, and he's skating on the ice.
Or like trying to figure out where to put his hands, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
it's
really the basics.
If anything, the high stakes moment of them, everyone, if anything, the high stakes moment of them performing at the Olympics is kind of the outlier in their relationship.
Yes.
Right. Time out.
It's almost like if you ordered fish at high stakes. Huh?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Wait, was this? Situation. This is literally the first time I'm considering the possibility that High's Steakhouse is like an intentional play on words? Like, was Highs?
That it's a high stakes.
Was he like, oh, my last name is High? I should open a steakhouse because it'll be a good pun. Did you guys think of this? Is this
Butcher House?
Is this only occurring to me? Was this obvious to everyone else that it was a pun?
We've been forced to grapple with this in real time.
Yeah, no, this is in the moment.
Wow.
Yeah, no, the marketing department.
Is this where gamblers eat meat? Like,
yeah,
what?
The marketing department at Highs has been like, any episode now, they're going to fucking get this. Yeah.
If there were like a pair of dice like on the sign, that would be so awesome. Oh, shit. Oh, my God. We could rebrand it and really.
Boy.
All right.
All right, so the next review that I think is interesting, too, is from...
Wait, do you guys want me to drop my bombshell here, though? I feel like this is the time for it.
Wait, what? Do you have another bombshell?
That you wet your diaper right?
I'm Drew Barrymore. No.
Welcome, Scabs.
I don't know that they're right for each other.
You know what? I love this. Let's get into this. A one review described their relationship as, "I love it when a black cat gets with a golden retriever." I would say,
wow,
that's funniest amazing description. That's from Kaylee.
Yes.
I'm uncomfortable.
That's perfect.
I love when a black cat gets with a golden retriever. That, like, she just has cat energy,
yes,
and he's such, like, this
yes
big, dumb dog.
Yeah, he is such a dog.
Yeah, he is a dumbass
he's a dumb
retriever
dog. And, like,
he just wants to chase
day,
a stick.
Yeah, yes, they're getting along in this moment, but I just think a cat and a dog can't be together. Like,
yeah,
they're not actually that compatible. Like, it works, and it
so
all
wait,
makes sense.
Sheesh. Is your theory that they would have logically like broken up a few weeks after this was over?
I think it'd be a couple of months of like feeling high,
they dated, yeah,
off their win, and
it's hot and heavy, and then at some point they're like, wait, you know, Doug Dorsey's been like having multiple affairs and whatever, right?
I actually think Doug's like
monogamous,
like I think he that first scene, he could have just run out the door. He tried to remember that poor woman's name, that poor right German woman.
He did, he felt bad, you know, about that. Yeah,
he tried, like, you know, I don't think he's that dirty a dog. I just think he's young and sowing his oats, and you know, but I think he's gonna settle down, you know, and I just don't know if Kate's And the Greenwich life is going to be that life for him.
Mm-hmm.
What are they going to do together? Go to the ballet?
Yeah. Like, it's a pretty good point.
It would be a problem.
I think Sarah S.E. has a different opinion, who watched the film on August 9th, 2023, said, in the end, they did win me over as a couple, but one I would avoid, which I agree with that. I feel like if you had a dinner date with Kate and Doug Dorsey later, like that dinner, like they'd be like passive aggressively nipping at one another, but the playfulness is gone. Like, you're just like, whoa, this is tense. There's something going on here.
Right.
And they're like, so are you still skating? Yes. And they're like, you know, just kind of like, babe.
On thin ice.
Yeah, you're on thin ice. Like, you know, nice. I feel like they'd be nipping at one another. So I think, like, I agree with you that despite them being together at the end of this movie, long term, I don't know.
Yeah. I think without like the thrill and the kind of fuel, the competitive fuel and exhilaration of like competition and skating, like I don't really see them doing like much besides bickering. And when you have the bickering, but you don't have any of the like, you know, the payoff, the catharsis of like a, you know, a performance or a competition or something where you're like, okay, all that energy that we've been, you know, an angst that we've been putting into this thing has like a reason.
Yeah.
If you take that away, all you're really left with is the tension and the angst and the bickering. And like, yeah, I think that would get old pretty quick. I don't see Doug ever fitting into that Greenwich world. I mean, we all know how uncomfortable he was at that New Year's Eve party in his tuxedo, which I have to point out, I recently rewatched and I forgot in that film. Have you guys seen that recently? There's a New Year's Eve party in that one where the female protagonist is like brushing the dust off the tuxedo of William Holden's character in that. I'm sure it was like not intentional. You know, whatever. It's not that uncommon a thing. But I was just like, it reminded me of it. And I was like, oh my God, I wonder if... No, probably not. But
I mean, maybe it was a reference.
Yeah, who knows?
I
mean...
It was at her New Year's party that I found out how she felt about me. Maybe I'd been an idiot not to have sensed it was coming. That sad, embarrassing revelation.
Absolutely divine. Turn around.
Please.
Come on. Perfect. Wonderful shoulders. I love that line.
It's all padding. Don't let it fool you.
But anyway, I don't know. I tend to lean in the direction of like they would not. They would probably not last that long.
I do like a few people did mention this that reviewers were mentioning. Several folks have mentioned that this is like the only piece of media in the world history that's ever made me believe in enemies to lovers. Like, I genuinely can't breathe whenever I watch this. Like, it is one of those things that, like, a lot of movies that try to be, like, they hate each other.
Yeah.
And then in the end, love each other. Like, you kind of are rolling your eyes. But this movie does really...
Yeah.
...incrementally succeed in, like, everything does make sense.
Tony gets there. He gets there, you know?
Together. But I do think it's every step of the way it makes sense...
Yep.
...why they are with each other.
Agreed.
I mean, the casting's incredible. The acting's incredible because it does really feel like you're watching two people fall in love in real time on film.
Yeah. It's utterly credible and believable, which is, a real, again, testament to Tony.
I mean, I'm still going to put a little asterisk there and say, like, how much of that is, like, the we can't get together tension because we're trying to be colleagues.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Because we never really have a conversation between them that is like that heart to hearty, like where they get to know each other. I mean, that stuff is happening, but we don't see it.
Other Everything than so discussing their literacy levels and whether or not they graduate.
Yeah, and that's
mom
early.
Mom is
stuff.
A knockout. That is like your mom's a real knockout.
Right.
Like
every time
they could have a real moment, Doug's. Dumb golden retriever brain tells him, oh, look at that juicy bone over there. Like he's just a dumb, dumb dog.
Right.
Dumb dog, go vroom, vroom.
And it's like, there are a lot of movies. I obviously, like, I am a rom-com buff. And there are a lot of movies from many different time periods that are sort of enemies to lovers, you know, like, or where... There is like a pivotal scene where they come to understand each other at least like once or twice, where it's like there's like somebody has like an insight into the other person, and like shares that with them, and that makes them feel seen. And there's like, I feel like there's a little bit of that is like a little missing here, you know. I think like Doug has his like revelation when she apologizes in France. That it really hits him that this girl is lost, you know, and that she needs empathy and that she is like acting out, right? Because she's alone in the world.
Yep.
But you see him, and that's Doug's amazing acting, right? Like D.B. Sweeney is like really giving us that he's like, oh, I get her, you know, like she needs support. You know, and that is super attractive, right? As a like a female audience member, I feel like you're like, wow, that's hot, you know. But like, he doesn't ever say that. Like, we don't get to that part. You know, that's all gonna like kind of happen later. So, like, maybe if I saw a little more of that, I'd feel differently. But I don't know. At this point, I'm kind of like, your lifestyles are so different. Like, maybe they'll just end up being like really good friends who shared like a big thing together.
I kind of like that interpretation.
Yeah.
Big vibes that they could be just friends. Another point that I think is important to, I never really thought about this in terms of the rule books. We've always talked about the Pamchenko being the thing that disqualifies them at the end. But one reviewer, Ave, who watched the film on July 17th, 2022, said pretty sure if they kissed on the Olympics rink like that, they'd get disqualified. Like, It's something that you don't actually.
I have
see
thought about that.
In
yeah.
skating.
Wait, what?
Not really a thing in skating.
It's not a thing. Like, I think if it was a thing, you'd see that shit all the time to try to like get the judges on your side. There's a possibility that this might be
right.
Cool.
Like, it's an emotional ploy that they're
just a deep ploy to get some like extra points at the end there from like the audience. There, so it's a possibility that it wasn't the Pavchenko that got the DQ. It was kissing on the ice.
Oh my god. Wow. Now I'm envisioning like an alternate reality where like that is allowed and like it does get you like maybe an extra half a point. So it becomes like this arms race where like every every skating pair is like, okay, like you know what we have to do at the end, right? And they just like keep like ratcheting it up and ratcheting it up.
I would pay to see the couple where one person wants to kiss the other person, like.
But like there's like a fine line where like obviously
like
if you
feelings are not mutual,
if you go like too raunchy and smutty, like you get penalized. But if it's like
absolutely
sensual and tasteful, like the
points.
Judges will reward you.
Right.
So like
if it's gratuitous, like you can hurt the performance.
Like, oh my god.
I would be like big time PDA. Let's get like as much PDA, like be gross about it. Like if we're gonna do this, let's go all the way.
It's like just trying to get those bonus points at the end. But these were the most interesting points that I felt. One other point that I guess this is more of a movie goof that somebody mentioned, that you know that this movie's not real because Doug is a 90s hockey skater and he doesn't have a mullet. Fair point.
Or a mustache.
Hockey man. Also, another person, Robert Mitchell, just to shout out this, I did like this comment, is my favorite part of the buildup of this story is when D.B. Sweeney's brother informs him the 23rd rejection letter arrived from the Detroit Red Wings, and Doug is still holding out hope for the Maple Leafs calling him to hit the ice. It is a nice moment that he's holding out hope for the Maple Leafs. But those were our Letterboxd reviews that I am super glad sparked additional conversation.
You've been listening to Switch.
Switch FM.
Woo!